Welcome to Regenerative Voices, Elevating Stories, Activating Change podcast produced by At the Epicenter. I'm Celine Diaris, and today I'm here with a dairy farmer who's part of Organic Valley's co-op. His name is John Banson. John, thank you so much for joining me today.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, you know, it's really exciting. Our podcast is relatively new, and you're our first farmer to get to talk to. And it's, for me, quite exciting because it's part of our focus in the work that At the Epicenter is doing to be talking to and about agriculture in the United States and the world, and how soil is this extraordinary living system that we have operated with some disregard of. And if we turn our attention to focusing on soil health, there's a whole host of benefits that we receive. Carbon sequestration, water percolation, and nutrient density are sort of the top three that come to my mind. But you are actually there on the ground doing this in real time. So I would very much love to hear from you, your relationship to soil as a dairy farmer.
Okay, well, it's really everything we do. So you know, I'm a dairy farmer, but in effect, I'm farming microbes, not cows, because the whole system is based on the microbial health in the soil and in the plants and in the cows. And if you take care of that, health follows every time. And so, you know, my job as an organic farmer, because in organics, you don't use pesticides or herbicides or antibiotics, and you have to have a healthy system. It's all about building a healthy system so you don't have to worry about not needing all those shortcuts and those fixes. And so it really all has to start in the soil. We haven't just disregarded it. We haven't even thought about soil in most of agriculture. And in fact, we're abusing it. It's really abuse.
Absolutely.
And we just can't do that anymore. That's the fix to all of our issues today, whether it's global health or human health, is soil health. And that's what we need to focus on. You know, that's what we focus on our dairy, is really how do we ramp up soil health. There's a brilliant soils scientist, Christine Jones, from Australia, who is working on all this. And she just had a piece out about the tipping point of the numbers of species you need in a pasture to ramp up the microbes in the soil to really build soil and soil health. So there's all sorts of people working on that now. We just need to start following that.
So when you say species, are you talking like plant diversity on a landscape?
So plant diversity. So it really shows that the more plant diversity you have on top, the more microbe diversity you have on the bottom. It also shows that when you're eating foods and that gut microbiome study that was crowdfunded, where thousands of people took part of that, showed that it didn't matter whether you were a vegan, a vegetarian, or an omnivore, the people that were the healthiest, whether they ate meat or not, were the ones that ate a wide variety of plants. So microbes, that relationship between soil microbes and plants and gut microbes and plants and human health and cow health is just all intertwined.
Absolutely. And I appreciate that you brought up the gut biome, because I think one of the ways I like to explain to people who really, the idea that soil is alive at all is a whole new concept, is comparing that to what we're learning about our guts. Because interestingly, our understanding about soil and gut have sort of arisen almost in tandem with one another. And the power of understanding that diversity, which is yet another theme in our world right now as we watch ourselves lose extraordinary amount of diversity, that diversity is sort of foundational to health on every level. And I imagine you can really speak to that from your perspective on the farm. What constitutes a rich diversity on your landscape that you know means you're creating a really healthy space for your cows to graze.
Right, and the more plants I can put in there. So in our pastures, we'll have grasses, but we'll have forbs like plantain and chicory. We'll have legumes like white clover, red clover, and bird's foot trefoil, and sandfoin, and you name it. So the more things you can bring to the party, the better. And so it not only ramps up the soil health, but when you ramp up the soil health, you ramp up the nutrients in that food for the cow. And so then you ramp up her healthful microbiome in her body, which then you don't need things to treat her with. And so,
right.
So we focus, in fact, just this springtime, we started putting in more diversity in the pastures, putting in a mix of 15 to 20 different species of plants in a stand that was already fairly diverse. So we're just picking up that game.
How do you do that? Like are you throwing seed down? Are you putting seedlings in?
We actually have a no-till drill that actually has some sharp feet on it that you drag behind the tractor and as it makes little furrows, it drops seed in those furrows. Mm. And it drops a mixed, anything I put in the mix will be dropped down in those furrows.
Cool. So how long do you have to like leave that pasture where you've just gone through and applied that diversity of seeds? How long before you bring the cows through or how does that work?
Well, so we rotationally graze our cows. So our cows get a fresh piece of grass every 12 hours because what we need
12 hours?
12 hours the cows are on fresh grass. And
wow.
About every 34 days they come back to that same piece. So, you know, we'll graze it for 12 hours. In 34 days, they'll come back to that.
That sounds like a high touch operation you got going on there.
Well, it's management intensive grazing. it's fairly low on labor to do that. It's just high on management. So we have to really be watching what we're doing and acting accordingly. And then observation is absolutely key. So if I see a pasture that's a little weak, I'll no-till some more seeds into it.
Interesting. So you have Jersey cows, is that correct?
Right. I have primarily Jersey cows. I have a couple crosses out there. We use a lot of bull semen from New Zealand because they really focus on pasturing there. And that's what we focus on is pasturing.
So, did you say bull semen from New Zealand?
Correct. So we source. We do artificial insemination. So my son and I are actually the bulls there, I guess. So, we can buy the semen from bulls. Bulls that fit our program. So we want a cow that has a big, strong body and a big, big belly and open ribs because she can take in more of these high quality forages and process them.
Interesting.
A cow that's skinny and narrow, she can eat maybe 100 pounds less of grass a day. Lots of these cows will eat 300 pounds of grass a day. Yeah.
That's impressive. So how many acres are you utilizing and how many cows do you have on your farm?
Well, we manage the whole farm is about 600 total acres. Of that, about 150 is in riparian zone woods along the rivers and the streams that flow
nice.
Through the properties. And we graze for the milk herd itself, about 160 cows are grazing on about 120 acres of grass ground, of forage ground. Then we also have all of our young stock on other pieces of ground. So in total, we're grazing about 250 acres of ground. And then some of the ground we actually raise forages on for wintertime feed because we have to store for feed for the wintertime because we're grass milk producers, which means our cows have to be eating only forages.
Wow. So you have stepped into that, I think, pristine practice of only feeding a ungulate the food it's designed to eat.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's wonderful. I think people, and one of the things I'm excited about with our podcast is, you know, we're really wanting to have this be a resource for people in our society to understand, you know, what does this mean? What does grass-fed mean? What does this mean for the animals? And also importantly, what does it mean for us? So could you speak a little bit about what that value proposition is for, I think, you know, let's talk a little bit about how it's better and healthier for the cow herself. And then let's talk about what that means for milk production and then nutrition for those of us who are going to consume the dairy products coming from a grass cow.
So a cow is a ruminant, and a ruminant has four stomachs. You know, their stomach is divided into four, and the largest being the rumen, where she takes in all this feed she eats. So a cow will eat about 8 hours a day. She'll spend 8 hours a day roughly chewing her cud, which means burping the food back up and chewing it and swallowing it again. And she'll spend 8 hours a day doing that. And what they're doing is they're chewing it finer because you're feeding the microbes in the cow. You're not feeding the cow the grass, you're feeding and the forages. You're feeding the microbes in her stomach, which have developed along with her over the ages to do exactly that job. And what those microbes like are forage. A cow's a forager. And so they're not meant to go around and eat a lot of grain. You know, if they were given over to their own complete devices, they'd every now and again eat a seed head, but not very often. It would be mostly just forages because they want the nice lush forages. And they want those because that's what the cows are healthiest eating. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, our job is to let a cow be a cow and get out of her way a bit. You know, my job is to create a healthy salad for her out in the pasture and then let her do her thing, you know. And that's, unfortunately, I think we've gotten to a point in a lot of agriculture where, you know, we've industrialized it and we try and shove a square peg in a round hole. And the fix to that is just get bigger hammers, right? It's just keep hammering. And we choose, and organic dairy at Organic Valley here, we choose to work with the natural process, not against it. And some farmers still feed a small amount of grain, but more of us are moving out of grain totally and completely. And that's because whether you're a cow, a person, a dog, a chicken, a fish, every species has what they need to eat to make them healthiest. And really a human is an omnivore. We can eat a little mix of everything, but we're healthiest if we eat mostly forages, or things that have foraged, because in the human nutrition part of this is all about what, when a cow is allowed to be a ruminant, what that does to the milk that she produces. Now, she produces less milk. I can tell you that right now. As a dairy farmer, I've seen it both ways. I started my career as a conventional dairy farmer feeding a lot of grain. And then I went to a dairy farmer doing organics, feeding a very little amount of grain. And now I'm an organic dairy farmer feeding no grain. And as you take the grain away, the cow produces less milk.
Why is that? What is the difference with the grain?
The grain holds a lot of starch.
It's sugar?
It's sugar. It gets broken down to sugar, which ramps up those microbes in the gut of the cow to,
of course, get, right,
you know, to go a little bit crazy. But what that also does, it has negative health effects on that cow. And it also, as you feed grains, they're high in omega-6s. And the human diet has become way too high in omega-6s. And way too low in omega-3s. And and it should be omega-3 to omega-6 ratio should be somewhere between 1 part omega-3 to 2 to 3 parts omega-6. The current American diet is somewhere around 20 parts omega-6 to 1 part omega-3.
Whoa.
And when you
feed a cat. Let's just say that again. I'm going to just pause for a moment and just say the average diet in this country is one part omega-3 to almost 20 parts omega-6, and a healthy balance would be one part omega-3 to 2 to 3 parts omega-6. Correct. Is that what you said?
Correct. Because
that's shocking.
Well, and what you have is you have so much of our animal agriculture being fed lots
grain.
of beef cattle being grain finished. People think that taste is what they want, but it's not healthy for that cow, and it's not healthy for the people when you're high in omega-6s. So, and that goes for the cow. The cows, you know, in herds, in conventional herds that are fed large amounts of grain, they'll have problems with acidosis, and once they calve, having fatty liver, all sorts of things, because it's the wrong kind of fat they need. Now, a cow on primarily grass will give, our cows give more omega-3s than they give omega-6s. We're about 1 to 0.9. And so that alone would help balance that grain-heavy diet most Americans eat.
That I think it's really important to note as I'm listening to you, I'm going, wow, there's such a correlative relationship between what's good for this animal's well-being and exactly similar to us also, what's good for our well-being. And it's almost if we were to really collectively recognize that if we were better caring for the animals, we would also be better caring for ourselves, because there's a direct connection,
right,
in health across the whole spectrum.
Right, and that means that taking better care of our soils. So, and it starts with the soils, because that's what's feeding the animals. But then it's also feeding the animals what the animal was intended to eat. Now,
like
a pig, they're also omnivores. So they would search out some grains. So, you know, pigs could probably use a little grain in their diet. And chickens, that's primarily, they eat bugs and lots of grains. That's they're seed eaters. If you turn them loose in your yard, they're going after a lot of seeds, because they need that dense type of starch in their diet.
Right.
But
a cow's
a ruminant, and we need to treat them like that.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, that's the whole basis of organic agriculture, is that we are not, there's none of us living alone on this planet. We're all interconnected, everything, all the way from the microbes, all the way to us. And if we forget that, you know, we take it at our own peril.
And we have forgotten that, and we are in a bit of peril.
Oh, yeah, I think so. Yeah, and good on you for maybe helping change that topic a little bit.
Well, thank you.
Make people think about what's going on.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things is easy not to do is to think relationally, to think about the interconnectedness. And it's easy to sort of have a bit of tunnel vision and not start looking for how things are interconnected and what that ultimately means, because it kind of ups our responsibility level, and not always do we want to have that sort of accountability. So I think we're at an interesting crossroads as a species collectively. Are we going to up our game, become more accountable and responsible, and that at the end of the day, if we do, we benefit from a lot better, you know, air to breathe, water to drink, food to eat, and we're creating habitats and ecosystems that are thriving and supporting a diversity of life, which we also are benefited by. So it's sort of enlightened self-interest to take better care of our planet and each other.
Well, absolutely and completely and totally. And, you know, we've attempted at all costs on our farm to keep pushing towards that better balance. So we're now currently in a big tree planting, native tree and shrub planting through our pastures, strips of those through our pastures, just in order to make sure that biodiversity is as highly charged on our farm as possible. Because we really see every time we up the game, we benefit, the cows benefit, the whole system benefits.
So can you say a little bit more about that, shrubs and trees? Is that like creating a silva pasture? Is that the
word? It's actually, we're actually not going a silvopasture route. We're just putting in wide strips of trees, native trees and shrubs, to provide habitat for wildlife, but also to provide shade for our cows as the planet warms. Mm-hmm. You know, the days in Oregon, and I'm a dairy farmer in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. The days, clearly, since we started our farm 28 years ago, every year seems to be getting hotter and hotter and drier and hotter. And cows don't like a lot of heat. And the more shade and comfort we can provide them as they're out grazing, the better. So we're just ramping up the numbers of trees and shrubs. And the shrubs are primarily to provide food for the wildlife that are coming in, mostly birds, but nice. Some mammals to come in and have something to eat. Well, because that's all interconnected too. And there's an interconnected with the whole business. So the more we can do that, the better. We are off as a farm, but also the cows are off and the consumer's off, because they're getting more nutrient dense food every time we do these things.
That's wonderful. I'm also curious, one of the things, we're hosting another Regenerative Earth Summit this year in October, and we have a panel called Farmer to Farmer, and I'm very curious and interested in the kinds of influence that farmers have with one another, because I think obviously for people like me to come in and say, hey, farmer, we want you to do things to take care of the soil. And they're like, you don't know squat. And I'm like, true, I don't, but I think it's a good idea. You, as a experienced dairy farmer, who I understand is like a multi-generational dairy farmer in your lineage, like your great grandfather was a dairy farmer. And
yes, all the way through. There's been...
That's beautiful. I mean, what a rare find. To see that continuance in agriculture through a family system of generation to generation. So kudos to you for choosing to stay in that family business.
And my son is also back on the farm now and has chosen to take over our farm from us when he can figure out how to throw us off the place. So. But the old joke is that dairy farming is a disease you have to be born with. You don't know any better. You don't know that there's anything called a weekend or a holiday, vacations. You don't know that. That's not, if you grow up in it, you don't miss it if you don't ever have it, right? So.
Well, since you've just revealed to us you're a cow bull, I mean, it kind of makes sense that... You're deeply entrenched in this relationship and this devotion to your dairy cows and their long-term generational well-being.
Right. I have cows that trace all the way back. My father took over the farm from his father. We're on a different farm than we grew up with, but when I moved off the home farm, and my wife and I found our own farm, I took cows with me. Well, those cows' lineage can be traced all the way back to my grandfather's farm.
That's impressive. That's beautiful.
Yeah,
I think that's really beautiful.
Yeah.
How are you experiencing your influence with other dairy farmers, both in your locale and then also in the larger Organic Valley co-op? How are you experiencing your influence and, opportunity to teach and share what you're learning?
Well, in the greater dairy world, I probably don't have all that much influence, because conventional dairy is stuck in a mindset that, the industrial mindset. And so if you can't get yourself out of that mindset, you're not going to listen to some new information. Where I really have ability to influence is in the organic section, in the mm-hmm. organic sector, and interfacing with I know a lot of farmers from all over this country. I've been involved with Organic Valley for 20 years. I have friends, dairy friends all across the United States now, and it's just a great bunch of people, and they're open-minded, and they want to learn and they want to think, and that's what you really find in our type of agriculture is people really want to figure out how to do it better and how to do it more naturally and what can we do. So I write in a magazine called Graze Magazine. I write articles every now and again when something really strikes my fancy, and the editor gave me the green light to anytime I have anything that I'm really interested in, write him up article and I'll put it in. So I do that. I'm part of a grazers group out in Oregon where, you know, we come in, we just walked our farm here this last month, and took a look at all the things we're doing, the experimentation we're doing, have discussions about it. So, you know, dealing with people who are kind of open to new ideas, and those folks are always hungry for new information.
So the Graze, the magazine or publication you mentioned, is that something that is distributed primarily to farmers?
Yeah, it's primarily farmers who buy Graze. I don't probably see a lot of city people who don't have cows getting Graze magazine, but it's primarily farmers. Unless you have some goats or sheep on your lawn, I don't know.
Right. Okay. Good to know. Yeah. So if I decide I need some information on these sorts of things, that's a good go-to.
Check out Graze magazine.
All right. Thank you for that. So let's talk a little bit about, if you're comfortable with it, policy.
Oh, absolutely.
What types of policies would you say could really encourage maybe even some of your conventional dairy farming brethren to move towards carbon and soil sequestration, carbon sequestration and soil health enhancing practices? Are there thoughts or concepts out there that you think could maybe up the game for people to move in a new direction?
Right. Well, I think we need to, if we're going to incentivize a certain production, we shouldn't incentivize production where you're plowing soil, applying fertilizers and pesticides and herbicides every year. You know, we have that dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico that's supposed to be over 8,000 square miles this year alone. And what we've been doing was we've been incentivizing corn and soybean producers to produce more corn and soybean, and we've been incentivizing the beef industry to feed that corn and soybeans to those beef and the ethanol. So what we really need to look at is how do you build soil? And there's these mycorrhizal fungi, which are really a big part of the building blocks of soil. And they have these long filaments that can run miles, but it takes time and you can't just constantly disturb them. And somebody recently said, constantly disturbing them with tillage, plowing, tilling that soil is akin to a tornado coming through your house every year and having you have to rebuild it. Pretty soon you would be out. You'd be out of, you know, you'd give up, right?
Well, and for them, they probably die.
Right. Oh, absolutely. No, absolutely. So we need to focus our policy on practices that build soil microbial health. And that really starts with the subsidy programs, you know, subsidizing. We subsidize certain type of production now. Billions of dollars a year get subsidized into that type of production. We need to subsidize the type of production which would build soils. And one of the things is, you know, there's a lot of people who response to these horrible animal agriculture practices they see is to quit eating any meats.
Right.
Quit eating dairy. And it's the wrong response because you really need animals on these pastures to regenerate your soil and to store carbon, because that's what you're doing. You're storing carbon as you build soil organic matter. That's carbon being driven into the soil, because the plants during the daytime, they're making sugar through photosynthesis. In the evening time, they drive a big portion of that sugar down into the soil to feed the soil microbes, mycorrhizal fungi, bacteria. There's all this swapping going on down there. It's really a cooperative thing that's happening. Mm. But as they, as they drive that sugar in down and feed the mycorrhizal fungi and the bacteria, that's building soil organic matter. Sugars down into that system help build everything that's going on in the soil. And it feeds the microorganisms, it feeds the larger organisms in the soil. The roots of the plants also put that energy down in the soil. And so we need to be focusing on how do we get that kind of agriculture increased. And if you did that and quit over-fertilizing everything and had a mixed species out there of legumes and forages and forbs and everything, like the prairies were when we showed up, you wouldn't have a dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. Plus, if people understood that eating food, even if it's meat, even if it's dairy, off of that kind of ground was really good for them and good for the planet, instead of having a knee-jerk reaction to these horrible stories that come out about how bad animal agriculture is, that makes a difference. You know, people need to, policy needs to change. People also need to understand they need to vote with their dollars when they eat to support that kind of regenerative agriculture.
I could not agree with you more. And I spend a lot of time trying to help people understand the misinformation that they're being told when it comes to particularly animals on the landscape. There is no question that CAFOs are horrible for the animal, and they're also detrimental to the environment. And if you want to talk about a methane machine, those systems, because the animals are being fed the wrong food and they're in these horribly confined conditions where even the soil itself is just overrun with manure, there isn't a healthy cycle of activity there. And you change that to a pasture reality, you have a very elegant, long-standing ecosystem design that this planet has supported for its millennia, because grasslands and ungulates have an intimate relationship and they actually need each other. And I think helping people understand that connection between grasslands, and before it was the buffalo on this continent, and in other places it was deer and other types of hooved creatures who have had an extraordinarily important role in maintaining the balance of life in grasslands. Yeah. And so to think that animals are not important to those ecosystems is to misread the long-term interconnectivity between life on this earth and how we have arrived at the sort of diversity and abundance that we have.
Right, right. And I can see it on my own farm. I had an aha moment this springtime. I had two pastures, identical pastures, had just been planted last year, one next to the other. We had a very late springtime. It rained very hard and very late, so I couldn't get the cows out to the pastures as early as I wanted to. And one of those two fields got out a little ahead of me. There was a lot of feed, too much feed for the cows to get through. So I need to keep quality feed in front of the cows. You don't want to just keep chasing really tall, mature forage. You want the forage to have the right maturity level. So I grazed the cows on one of these pastures, and the one right next door, I harvested it. Mm-hmm. And I did everything the same. Everything else was the same on both of these identical pastures, and the pasture that we grazed came back so much greener, healthier looking, so much better, even though we had taken care of everything that those fields needed for nutrients and water. And yet you could just see clear as day, the one that had been, because there's a reaction to the plants actually from the cow's mouth, from the ungulate's mouth, as they grasp it and pull it, there's actually a physical reaction happening there that ramps up that plant. So it's just phenomenal to see. So putting your cows in a barn and just harvesting and bringing it to them does not do the same thing. Not even close.
That example that you just gave is really, really powerful, because when you think about, you had essentially the same type of mix of plants in a field. The difference between the two was a mechanized harvest versus animals grazing, and that the return to you when you looked at those fields on your next cycle, where the animals had been and they've pooped and they've peed and they've bitten and they've pulled and they've chewed, that yeah. that actually created a much healthier outcome than you just the cutting happening and not all that other interactivity.
Yeah, it was just clear as day. Absolutely.
Wow.
Just as clear as day. You can see right there on the line, they're right fields right next to one another. You can just see it as clear as day.
What is your hope for the next few years as we're sort of moving into what is predicted to be higher levels of climate chaos, and we're sort of chasing the response as a society to change our practices, to give ourselves, as a colleague of mine says, a longer runway before we sort of hit this point of no return? What is your hope in terms of, you know, you as a dairy farmer, a part of, you know, the Organic Valley community, what do you feel is possible?
Well, you know, I think as farmers, we can only control our little part of the landscape. So I can do things and that's why we're doing the tree planting, that I can have an effect on how we respond to that. In the global picture, I can't do a lot on the global landscape. I would hope that we can change policy, we can have some effect on that. You know, there's a lot of big agrochemical and seed companies that have a lot of vested interest in keeping it as a monoculture, pesticide, herbicide-driven system. And so I have hopes that we could change that. But what I really need to do is focus on what our response on our farm is to that. And also I need to interface with the public as much as I can, the people who are consumers of this food, to tell them what's good about it, what the positives are, because it's a very positive story. We live in a world right now that, you know, you can almost just spend time wanging your head up against a brick wall because of all the bad news, right? It's not good news that comes out most of the time. But I think what we need to see is this type of agriculture is good news, and that we can make the change, and it can be done, and we can do things like sequester huge amounts of carbon. You always hear this storyline about how, you know, cows belching is just destroying, you know, that's just adding to this greenhouse gas effect. Well, it is if the cows are belching feed corn that's grown thousands of miles away, and you're, every time you till the soil, you're blasting carbon into the atmosphere, and then you take that corn and you put it on a truck, and you blast more carbon out, driving it to wherever the cows are, and then you have the cows in a barn, and you blast more carbon into the atmosphere, hauling the manure away from the cows, over-applying it possibly to some land, causing more global warming. But if you're in a system that's all interconnected to nature, like grazing cows, there's more carbon being sequestered in that soil than that cow will ever give off. So that's, you know, we need to have those conversations. And I don't know how you get, I don't know how you reach enough people. And you know, we have short attention spans, it seems, in our country now. And if you have information that's more than one sentence, it seems people fall asleep on you.
Well, maybe they'll listen to this whole podcast.
I'm hoping.
But wouldn't that be wonderful? And I just want to say again, you know, this is Regenerative Voices, Elevating Stories, Activating Change podcast produced by At the Epicenter. And I'm Celine Diaris, the founder and executive director of At the Epicenter. And I'm here with John Banson, who is a dairy farmer in the Organic Valley Co-op, and his farm is in Oregon. And we're talking about the role that ungulates, cows, play in really being an important part of grassland health and carbon sequestration. John, one other question I have around the sort of the carbon side. Are you all, what's the scientific case? Are you measuring carbon in your soils? Are you able to create a demarcation of how it was at one point and how it's changing over time?
Well, the whole soil science behind microbial health and carbon sequestration is so much in its infancy. You know, there just is not a lot of great understanding. We can track things like soil organic matter. And soil organic matter does relate to carbon sequestration, because as more organic matter is in your soil, that's carbon that's being put in there. Now, how that directly correlates to total numbers, they're still debating that. But that's right. That's our one measurement. And you can see, as we've changed our practices on our farms, on our farm over the years, we're adding huge quantities of organic matter into our soils by building that soil organic matter. And that's a test on the soil test that we take.
So soil organic matter, let's talk a little bit about that. What does that mean, soil organic matter?
So soil's made up of different components. Lots of it is the silt, clay, sandy. You have different components in soil, and much of it's mineral. Much of it's mineral, and it's much of it's broken down rock that's been broken down over the ages. But part of the component of soil is organic matter, and that's the other stuff. The roots that have broken down, the humus in the soil, all these things that started as an organic matter, a carbon-based life. That's what it's really, the carbon-based life in the soil. And some of it's just newly broken down, and some of it's been broken down. It's very stable, and it holds on to nutrients very well. So you have this whole continuum of organic matter in your soils. And if you till the soils, what that does is it adds oxygen into the soil, and it gets those microbes really ramped up, and they start eating everything that's not in that really stable form of carbon, and that blasts that carbon to the atmosphere. And that's why you don't want to till that soil a lot.
Interesting. Yeah. Along with what we talked about a little earlier, it also is a disturbance, like a tornado coming through. And I like to tell people, think it's like a village underground. And there are pathways, roadways, worms. If you ever pull up a chunk of soil, you'll see these holes, like they're highways that they have that they're moving through. And when we disrupt that, I would assume you've just really created a lot of chaos. For a lot of organisms, like they can't find their way anymore,
and they have to about it. And those like the mycorrhizal fungi, they actually the type that are in our pasture settings, their filaments actually come in and pierce the cells of the roots of the plant to make that exchange of sugars from the plant to them easier, and the exchange of nutrients to the plant easier. So they have this intimate relationship. And like I said, they will extend up to miles through your soil. And every time they meet another filament, since they're all clones, they'll just combine and become one. And so that structure needs to, have time to do that. And that's part of organic matter. All those microbes down the soil are part of that organic matter as well.
One of the things I think is extraordinary in my understanding of all of this is, if you took a teaspoon of healthy soil, organic soil, you would find over 6 billion living organisms in that soil. And yeah. I was recently told that there's like the diversity of that is in the it's like a million different types of organisms of that 6 billion. And
in healthy soil.
In healthy soil. Very important point, because if you go to conventionally managed soils, you will find that number has radically plummeted. And the diversity of organisms is wiped out. The number of organisms is wiped out. And it's also like, if you look at soil in those two different spaces, you pick up one and it's more like dust. It doesn't stick and have a structure. And if you look at healthy soil, it literally has structure. It holds together. And that, to me, from a lay person, that's where my eyes tell me there's something very significant happening here. This feels wrong. This feels good.
And that's due to compounds that are put off by the mycorrhizal fungi. That's why you have that soil structure in healthy soil. There's a great book. There's a great book called Mycorrhizal Planet. And it's just a phenomenal read. And it's a good read for farmers or gardeners or anybody probably who lives on this planet. Michael Phillips wrote the book, and it's just a brilliant read, and it's all about the mycorrhizal fungi and their relationship to the soils and what they're doing down there. And I would encourage anyone to read that book if they want to brush up on their mycorrhizal fungi facts.
All right. That's fantastic. Thank you for sharing that. I, as a gardener in my backyard, I've gone to a non-disturbance approach to my little garden, trying to keep it covered throughout the season. So I don't pull anything out during the winter. I just let it all stay there. And then at springtime, I do pull out the dead things to put the new things in, but it's been, I'm seeing a benefit to that.
Just
in my own backyard. I don't have cows.
That's all right. Well, read that book and you'll be getting a broad fork and planting a cover crop every year on your garden. Guaranteed.
Fantastic. All right. I think we are running close to our time with each other, and I am so grateful for you and the work that you do, your dedication. The obviously you have an enriched experience because your son is also showing up. So that just speaks reams to me about the health of your farm, both financially and as an experience of a livelihood. So I just really want to honor you for what you have been focused on and crafting in your years as a dairy farmer. Thank you for doing what you do.
I always tell people when they say, well, you know, how do we get young people to come back to the farm? Because there's a lack of young people coming back to the farm. And it's an easy question. You know, there has to be joy involved in it. You have to find joy in that job. And what we do, as organic farmers now, it brings so much joy. You know, as you plant diversity in your pastures and you plant more trees, I had bluebirds move in this year because of more diversity. And you just don't get more joy than that, than going out to work and seeing bluebirds hanging out on your farm for the first time. And children get that. You know, children can feel joy. Mm-hmm. And so our type of system that's really aiding the health of the planet also brings joy to those people who are doing the jobs on those farms.
That is the most exquisite close we could possibly have had, to close on joy. Beautiful. Joy is the best ticket forward. Absolutely. Joy in what we do and joy in serving this larger constellation of life. Fantastic. Wow. Thank you so much.
I appreciate you getting the word out about how agriculture can be different.
Absolutely. My deep pleasure and honor. Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Take very good care of yourself.
Hey, you too. Nice meeting you.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Regenerative Voices Elevating Stories Activating Change podcast series is produced by At the Epicenter, a 501c3 nonprofit organization. The podcast and video recordings are made possible by the generous support of people like you. make a tax-deductible donation, or sign up as a monthly supporter by visiting attheepicenter.com/donate. Support packages start at $1 per month. The podcast series is also sponsored by several corporate and organization sponsors. To become a podcast sponsor, visit attheepicenter.com/contact to let us know of your interest. If you found this podcast episode insightful and meaningful, please pass it on by sharing it with a friend or colleague who will also enjoy it. Thank you for tuning in, for your support, and for activating change.